Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to Roll to Cast, your favorite award-winning TTRPG podcast, which has a different game system each season, and we are nearing the end. The dice have been cast on our season of Die RPG when the party's over, and I have been your GM slash the character Allegra, and we are back around the table to discuss everything when it comes to the season of when the party's over, what happened, what didn't happen, what we want to talk about. There might be some maybe some big feelings we want to talk about, some questions from you. So we're all back together, but just to remind you all of everyone's voices, what we're doing, let's go around the table and say your name and your characters' names.
Both of them.
Yeah. Both of them.
I am Phil, and I played Toby, who was the Neo Hawk.
Excellent. All right.
I am Luna, and I played Kat, who was Avendra, the Ecstasy Knight.
Ecstasy Man!
Oh, gotta remember this bullshit. Okay, I am Sean.
Yep.
And I was Logan, who was DW the Great, who was the Fool.
Amazing.
Good stuff.
Bringing the energy down.
That's so good. I love it.
We're all done with each other now.
Yeah. Anyway, my name's Max. I played Vince, who played as Flint, the dictator in the World of Die.
Yep. Excellent.
And I'm Chris. I played Xavier, who played Adam, who didn't really go by Adam, and I was the Godbinder.
Wonderful. And we are all back around the table to discuss what happened. So I guess this is where
fucking spoilers for everyone as well.
Oh, yes. Yeah. If you are listening to this episode, go back.
Why?
This isn't the one to jump in. Yeah, this needs a little bit of context. So go back, listen to the beginning of when the party's over, because it's a cracker season.
I don't think anyone's ever listened to one of these wrap-ups.
I'm certain they have.
If you have, let us know.
Yeah.
Tell us.
Yeah, I want to know. That's unhinged. If you have.
Speaking of things you want to know, this was a game that had a lot of secrets, had big mysteries. Every character had their own kind of intentions and backstories. And then again, we'll talk more about the mechanics with the creator of the game, Kieran Gillen, or co-creator in his own words. But each kind of character has their own secrets in terms of things they can do that other people don't know about. So I guess I'm going to throw it to you, the players, and ask, what do you want to know now that the season's over?
You go, Kat.
Oh, thank you. Well, I was just going to say, what the fuck, Ellen? That's what I was going to say.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that's my answer to that.
I, my immediate question is one that we ask every season, which was like, is there anything we did that threw you a massive curveball that you're like, oh, God.
Bro, this whole season. Because again, in the book, it says don't prep, which is...
Yeah, you were very stressed about that, I remember, before every recording session.
Yes. Yeah, I believe every single day of recording, I said, prepare for the loosest prepped session you've ever been in your life. And that was true. That was true every single day.
I think a lot of GMs who've done it fairly often run into that, oh my God, I haven't prepped feeling. But that's usually because you're expected to prep and you haven't.
Yes, this one you're expected to not prep.
But the feeling remains.
Yeah, I mean, I guess in terms of things that threw me, I wanted to make the central premise of the game, or like the core rule, which is that the ending vote has to be unanimous. I wanted to make sure that it could be anyone. Anyone could go either side. Mm. So that meant that the real tangible world had to have its own hooks, but it also meant that the fantasy needed to play to each individual character. So I wanted to make sure that that was all, that everything had its own temptations.
Yeah.
And as a result, it was just a game of seeing where people would then fall. So I guess for me, it was interesting to see the eventual flip of, you know, literally splitting the party in terms of people wanting to stay in the game versus people wanting to go home, which led to some amazing character beats. But for most of the game, it was just me watching what any of you would do. Yeah, truly, the surprising thing was just what you were going to do next, because I had no idea.
I mean, conversely, how much of the kind of structure had you planned out in terms of like the heart and the head and stuff?
Yeah,
did you have that kind of like shaped out? That we the
was Kat's husband on the always there?
Was
like,
that
was Kat's husband always there? Was that like those sort of like fun moments in the season?
Oh, I think there was like definitely a lot of big thoughts that happened between session one and session two, or rather the first time we actually play the game, not counting kind of session zero.
Yeah, when we are in, before we're in the world.
Yeah, I think I struck gold with the idea of making the map a big skeleton, mainly because that was coming into the game. That's just because I needed to have something to ground myself, just so it wasn't just we'll find
wandering.
You. Yeah. And I knew early on I wanted the final kind of confrontation to take place in some sort of either mausoleum or crypt, or because this whole season, fittingly, is about death. Like, it's in the name, die. But but particularly with Allegra and her character, the whole thing was about death. And so I wanted to really hit that home. And then I kind of struck on the idea of, well, what if the map is a skeleton?
Is a
so,
dead thing.
Yeah. Right. So that's one thing I had prepped. And then I knew I would, like, for Kat, I knew obviously there was going to be lots of juicy kind of drama to go for in terms of her relationship. What were things that I thought I could tempt people with? I guess it was a fine line of playing, of when the game was frightening, we used those things to scare the players. So it latched onto the worst parts of their reality in order to tempt them, or when it latched onto the better parts. So a great dynamic was when I realized, oh, Xavier isn't really buying in.
Yeah, I was going to ask that.
He wasn't really buying in. So then flipping the dynamic, as opposed to having him answer to a god, to making him have more power, or like playing more into a power fantasy, was one thing that I went, oh, I can actually, that's a way to make the fantasy much more tempting.
Yeah. Right.
Where did we start? Yeah. Sorry, I got caught away on like, a logic train.
how much was structured? How much was planned?
Like very little.
Very little.
Very little.
There was a city, the heart, and the head was the end, and that was about it?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, from the outset of the game, usually it's just the only thing that is set in stone is that everyone has to vote. So an easy thing is just to have the game master fuck off, because can't vote if you're
until
not all together.
Yeah.
So you can either find them, or, you know, there can be other different conflicts that...
Is that basically how rituals work as well? Is the game master is less involved in a rituals game?
Yes. Whereas you can play the game master more as a full player character in if you're doing a campaign style, but rituals is very kind of fast and dirty die RPG stuff. I did still fill out Allegra's stuff as a player, but, you know, obviously being a game master in the game but also being GM of this podcast, I had a lot of things to juggle with. So being outside of the story helped in that regard.
That means that everything from like meeting the robotic troop what we did in the castle, like did you at least have like dot points of, I want to introduce these characters, these are fun ideas, or was it literally in the moment you just conjured up these? Like, I want to know how much
here are
was
two princesses.
Conjured. How much was actually like, you were like, oh, roughly this.
So like our first session, which is mainly us in-person role-playing as the personas, and then getting to die and becoming the paragons and Allegra fucking off. That's pretty much in terms of the rituals checklist. That's where the game then goes, okay, you're on your own.
Yeah.
So I was pretty much following that, which meant I wanted to have a little bit of tone and flavor to what the world would look like when you got there and what was kind of going on in Allegra's mind. And then the loosest prepared things was, I guess, between the heart and the mind in terms of just getting you there and what you were going to do. And so just in between sessions, I was really racking my brain for touchstones that I can draw on really easily, but then also that Allegra, Allegra would be really obsessed with. So the Saints really good touchstone for that, especially because it's playing into themes of grief and guilt and regret and martyrdom and death and symbols. So that was a touchstone. Tarot cards were a touchstone. The Two Princesses is a kind of bastardization of like a Welsh myth. I'm not sure if it's Welsh.
So
it
you
might
would
be.
Just you would just like shaking your head out like. Like a handbag. You were just like onto the table. Like various myths and pop culture and whatever fell out, you just were like, this is what's happening. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
It worked very well.
Yeah. I think it worked so well because everything felt like a metaphor for something. And it was like, I didn't know what the metaphor was, but it felt like one.
Yeah.
And I think that was actually really powerful because it made the world feel very vibrant, you know, and it felt like there were so many layers to uncover if we had the time or the, you know, the smarts to do it, you know? Even if you're like, I just threw that out of there. It felt very rich.
I'm glad you nailed it. Yeah. I felt I didn't do the monsters as well because there's a bestiary in the back. But one of the main things is the bestiary goes into a lot of detail of things these things can represent in real life. And I kind of like flirted with it. But sometimes you can make it a real one-to-one of this minotaur is your older brother who always better beat you in every sport. You know, sports game and whatnot. And I like for the first monster, that was more going to the myth or the myth of the saint as opposed to an allegory that would really strike home for any character. But I kind of justified it being that Allegra's stealing from the...
Yeah,
look, you can justify a lot in this game, I've realized, and we'll just leave it there.
I like the whole dream logic of it, but I'm going to give you a reprieve. I'm going to ask Luna, if not ecstasy, other emotion would you have tapped?
Ooh, I feel like it's really easy to go like rage, but it is such a fun one. And or like maybe grief might be, especially if we're grieving a life you don't have, a cat, I think would be appropriate. That is actually what I originally thought. And then I was just thinking, I mean, we talked a lot, I think, out of recording, but about like how drawing on joy as the basis for your powers is like so fucked up.
Yes.
For the purposes of violence.
The happy, the more violent you are, the happier you are and vice versa. So yeah, it was fun to play on that idea of different kind of barbarian, I guess.
And the ability to suck happiness out of people as well.
Yeah. It also
pretty dark.
In a game that flirts a lot with, you know, the meta kind of looking at RPGs and how people play RPGs, it's kind of a good little meta commentary on murder hobos, though, a little bit. Because you have some players out there who are just really delighted to fuck shit up.
Barbarians love going in a rage,
It's definitely a power fantasy to it. I think that is often probably a lever that a lot of players feel is one that kind of is meant to kind of get them to stay. But I don't know if you guys agree with this. I felt that this group was less about the temptation of this world than escaping the other one.
Yeah.
At least it definitely was for me. It was more fleeing something than being like, well, this is so great. Let's stay here. It was more like, I don't want to go back. It's crap there.
Yeah.
It's kind of a framework, right? Of like looking at like, are they looking at it from a dire perspective or are they looking at it in context of their own life? Like, is their life shit or like, you know, because for DW, it's very much about like wanting to escape expectation. Mm. And, you know, from what is expected of him in a past life, here, there literally was no expectation other than to play the game. It's like, yeah, cool, I can do that.
Yeah, pretty. It seemed that for you, Max, that Vince was escape into some stuff.
Yeah,
well, yours was definitely the I feel like weirdly and maybe inappropriately for Roll to Cast, the two guests, I feel like I was probably the meanest to in terms of appealing to the more tragic parts of the backstory.
Very melancholy.
Yeah. Well, it's so I think that is so funny because I actually came into playing Vince with a very kind of strong idea with what I wanted him to be like, and what it like once he got into the game, and before, obviously, like this person who really is got nothing going on in their life and wanted to kind of revel in treating this game like a game and having just doing whatever the fuck he wanted to do. And it's so interesting because I had previously decided for myself before we even started playing that Vince would never want to leave the game.
And then you
fully 100%. And then I died.
Yeah.
And then
completely changed your character up.
Completely. Yeah. And that was such a wonderful gift as a role player in a way, getting like resurrected and stuff. It was it fully changed, and even just like his allegiance to people in the group and the way he was interacting with them, what I never would have saw coming was the Vince Xavier thing
that
happened.
That was so good. Yeah,
that was that really took me off guard. Yeah. You know,
that's so interesting that happened as well, because we might have talked about it post game, not, you know, without you guys, you beautiful listeners, because sometimes we talk without but there's an interesting mechanic in Die because no one stops playing even with character death. So the Fallen are previous characters who have died. I don't know if I revealed that or not.
I think you just talked to us about it.
You talked to us about it, yeah. Because
there's a like a character sheet.
There's a character sheet for it, which I would have given to you.
And you were close to.
I was close to doing it, but I was thinking, well, Chris still has a miracle. Chris Xavier still has a miracle up his hands. And being in that much debt to a god, it's pretty good story-wise.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to wait for a hot second.
Yeah.
See if Chris goes for it. And if not, I was going to slide over that Fallen character sheet. And that was making me so nervous because it really would have changed the dynamic of
the game
because then your whole job would have been to kill a player character to get their die back.
Yep.
So again, that's a huge change to the dynamics, to the story.
I like this more subtle outcome though, that he does come back as himself, but he's obviously changed.
Mm. Yeah.
And it's not like, oh, he's warped, he's changed, but like just his attitude changed. And yes, your attitude to all of us, but like the stakes for everybody changed.
Yeah,
the
massively.
Whole group changed. It was like perfect timing.
Yeah.
We were all like, yeah, this is a fun game. Let's just get through it. We'll be fine. And we're like, oh, this could.
You didn't have a this near could be death very experience. Bad. You had a death experience.
But I think that actually, I think that if he had a near death experience, I actually think almost nothing changes for him.
Yeah.
Because he's like, yeah, and then I'm fine tomorrow. That's a game. That's the thing that happens. Yeah. But I think it was the literal death. What happened in between? Literally nothing. You were dead. There's nothing.
Yeah.
Is a void. And then you come back and you have this second chance, but you're like, no, this is not a game. This is very serious. We need to get the fuck out of this dangerous place.
Yeah.
Which helped. And no one understands it.
And it helped me cement some things that I was considering for Allegra's backstory too, which is really fortuitous.
Well, I mean, speaking of the death, there is such a, and especially listening back to it, because I did forget the order in which these things happened, but the bottle that DW found
in the
liquid in it described before the death happens.
Yes.
But then the liquid inside perfectly was the stuff to do with the death.
Mm.
And there's something like, obviously you didn't know that was going to happen, but it felt like Allegra had a greater kind of grip on the reality of the world than maybe was true, but at least for Vince, it like really upped the stakes of how dangerous this place actually is and how dangerous this person is in this place, which was really fun.
Character death is obviously a not a new thing for Roll to Cast, but this was one of the most interesting games in which it could have happened, just because of what comes next, you know, and knowing that we would keep you all here. Very interesting thing. I wonder if this is a good place to segue to one of our fan questions. Why just while not? We're talking about Paragons. This is, we have a kind of little subgroup in the Die Discord, which is very cool. We had a question from Alex, who has been a big proponent of this season. If the players could have chosen their own Paragons, what would they have wanted to try? I seem to recall the GM assigning based on track record and personal knowledge, because I did ask all members of Roll2Cast to submit their top three. But unfortunately, Max and Luna, I slotted you in.
I just did that thing that people do where I nodded in approval, knowing full well that didn't happen to me, because I thought everyone else had that happen to them. I didn't want to be rude. Is that called cast privilege?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I obviously knew I was going to be working with these three dudes before I, you know, we kind of finally then came to select you two as guest players, which might be an interesting thing to talk about after as well.
Yeah. Mm. Well, I got my first choice, so I'm happy. Well, because I just went for the simplest, like, Sean archetype. Like, what have I played the most of in Roll2Cast? So where's the meta, like, kind of, like, narrative in there, and see then what I can do a spin on with that character as well. But if I was, like, thinking, like, if I was to go again, and if I was to try and think of a different... I think I would love to play, I think, Emotion Knight. I think Emotion Knight would just be really fun.
Yeah.
And, but then where I'd fit on the wheel would be, like, really fascinating. Because, again, Rage is the obvious one, but I don't... Whether it's, like giddiness or, like, some
Disgust
sort of, like...
Disgust is an interesting one as well.
I'd love to see some other playthroughs.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
What about fear?
Emotions. Yeah.
Like, you're terrified. I feel like that would be a really easy one for this season to just be like, holy shit, I'm going to attack stuff now.
I'm afraid and I'm strong.
Mm. Yeah, or I can take the fear from someone else, you know?
Yeah,
like,
that's very cool.
Like, that's actually, like, a helpful, you know, mine never really felt good of, like, I'm going to sap your joy. But, like, you know, if someone's going to do something and they're really scared in your group, you can be like, I'll take this fear from you, and I'll use it.
It becomes much more of a self-martyring thing I will take your
altruistic
negative
than I'm taking all the applications love positivity.
The applications of an emotion night are just really fascinating and exciting. I'd love to explore that.
Just for your knowledge, Sean, make sure to give the fool to someone who gets the joke and is in on it.
Yeah, I did read that.
Well, you weren't meant to. It's not true. You can read whatever you want.
Exactly.
Yeah. I guess we'll go around. Max, do you? You didn't get to pick.
But what would you have picked?
Before you had, like, when you first pitched the idea to me and you kind of gave me a very brief rundown of what Die is and the Paragons that would be distributed, and you did say that you would distribute them, I did kind of have a very cursory look at all of them. And it's so interesting because at my first glance, I was like, I don't want to play a dictator.
Oh, no.
but specifically because I was like, what a scary, like, I was like, I don't know if I had to handle that on at the table. Like, it's kind of scary. It's kind of a lot to think about, like, when and where and how much I can use that.
Yeah.
Like, it just seemed too, like, it just seemed kind of too much for my brain at the time. So I think actually the original thing when I looked at them, I liked the idea of a god binder.
Oh, yeah.
A lot. Because I was like, oh, you can just, like, pick a god and then go really hard into that as an idea. But then also, it's funny, after having played it, I think I might have been shit at it. Or at least I think Chris did such a wonderful job with it that it's now intimidating to.
No, I'm with you. If I'd have been given Godbinder, it would have been awful. Like, well, I don't think I could do it.
I think actually, like, I thought of it. I mean, I didn't know anything really much about it, but I think I was thinking of it differently. But I also think I would have been a terrible fool, like, dreadful. Because I don't think that's...
You don't get the joke?
I don't get the jokes, man.
And you're not in on
them? I'm not in on them. I just also think I wouldn't do dumb... I mean...
You wouldn't do dumb
Flint
shit?
Flint did dumb shit at the start intentionally. So, like, was very blasé about the whole thing and did non-optimal things a lot of the time until he died. And then obviously changed. But Godbinder was interesting to me originally.
Chris.
I...
Do you remember your three?
I do. I think I sent them to you. Yes. I had a look through our Facebook message and I can't find it.
It
but
might have been in a group chat with everyone, or you might have actually just given it to me.
Oh, as a handwritten thing or something.
Yeah.
I do recall, I think, which was An Emotion Night and The Dictator and The Godfinder.
Yeah.
Those were my three. I think both are really interesting because of the emotion wheel that comes with it. And that kind of lends to like lots of different interpretations of how to perform a character. And I think that's really, really interesting. Like, like what we were talking about earlier of like fear being like this kind of selfless thing could also be this fucking awful person, right? Who just bullies the rest of the party into maintaining a constant level of fear so that you can siphon that off to get powerful.
Yeah.
You know, like the kind of endless possibilities, or even like having a combo of the voice, the dictator and the emotion knight, the dictator using the emotion knight and like using the voice on them to feel and buff their power over 9,000 is, see, this is why I'd be a terrible fool.
Or a better one.
I don't know about that. I'd be a rubbish fool.
A strategic
I'd be
fool.
A rubbish fool. But yeah, Emotion Knight and Dictator, I think were on my list because the emotion is really useful from a role-playing perspective. Those limitations being like, this is what you're focused on. This emotion is what your goal is or what you do is such an interesting thing because you're justifying that action then retrospectively or before the action happens so that like that leads to interesting roleplay. Like what is this character that wants to create fear or wants to create or wants to create disgust in people or uses it to get powerful and yeah.
I definitely early on had kind of pegged you for a Godbinder. And my reason for is it's interesting because if I'm reading the thing from the book, this doesn't sound like a crisp play style at all, right? It isn't really for those who are looking for crunchy mechanics.
No.
It's one where the player gets to interact with a series of god characters and barter for what they want.
Uh-oh.
It's the class whose abilities most involve roleplay as a core element. If a player likes yapping to NPCs, this is one of the best choices for them. Now, I know what you're all thinking.
That's antithetical to Chris.
However, what you do really well, Chris, is you play with power dynamics in your games as both GM and players.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, if there's anyone who's going to be really good at wheeling and dealing, that's probably going to be you, as well as kind of, you know, playing lots of social intrigue games. Hence why I kind of went for that. I also realized I didn't tell Max.
I was about to say, not to be incredibly selfish, but what is it, the dictator one? I want to know, man.
Give it to the most selfish guy. No, I'm kidding.
Give it to Max.
Yeah, it's so weird. It just says very give specific. It to Max.
Actually, we'll turn off all the mics just for a second. Just tell me.
It just says, no. So it talks about a lot of who not to give it to, which is really interesting because I guess the dictator is the most tricky one to play in terms of keeping everyone safe. In fact, early on, you can all discuss whether or not to have a dictator in your game and whether the dictator's powers can affect PCs
which
as well.
Which we did discuss that.
We did talk about that.
Wish I'd said no. No, you don't.
All right, two fools. Yes, so we said yes to dictator.
Yes.
But also we said that it can work on PCs, but you can, like, as a group, veto that outright.
So we also vetoed some things that we didn't want them to use the voice for.
Yes.
So, which I think is good.
You know, it talks about the dictator including themes of consent and emotional violation. The dictator's challenge to the player is one of navigating those boundaries and deciding what is acceptable and seeing how treating other people like tools is a temptation to them. This can go to some dark places, and the reason why you want someone mature enough to play the dictator is so that they don't go there unknowingly. So yeah, that's kind of the ethos. I was like, Max is a very emotionally intelligent person.
So
why are you looking at me like that?
How am I supposed to react to that, man? Yeah.
Now the moment when someone ripped their own heart out after you spoke to them is coming to mind.
I was like, I did. I obviously abuse it.
Yes.
In that, you know what I mean? Like, but that's.
And the thing, and the way that you keep talking about being scared to use the dictator's power is kind of exactly why I chose you. Yeah.
You should be scared of it. Yes. That's the whole point.
Yes. But also playing into the theme of dictators as bards and Vince's backstory being a performer, you know, who literally has weight with the words. It just seemed like a really nice fit.
Yeah.
Phil.
So me personally, I was interested in playing the fool, right?
Yeah.
So that's what I was kind of aiming for.
All fool season.
Yeah, I thought it was just like a fun thing. I'm getting to grips with being ADHD and it's a very impulsive character and basically that becomes their strength. But the persona I made doesn't fit with that. Toby is not in on the joke. Toby is not the fool. Like, it doesn't work for him. He's the butt of the joke. He's not in on it. And he resents the joke. So it doesn't really work for him. But I think post-game, what I thought might have been an interesting choice for him is dictator. Because he wants people to feel a certain way about climate change. Yeah. He wants people to feel a certain way about their responsibility to the earth and the future, right?
And specifically his politic.
And his politic, right?
Yeah.
And how tempting is that? Just like, what if I could just make people care about it? What if I could just go out and use my voice and say, we've got to change. You have to feel more strongly.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we're all doomed. It's for your own good.
That's so interesting.
And there's a real moral quandary there to be like, well, if I don't do that, then we're all screwed.
Yeah.
So I have to, but that way lies ruin, right?
Yeah.
So I think that would have been a really interesting take for him.
Damn, that would have been cool.
But that's not something I kind of realized until after the game. Beforehand, I was just like, yeah, fool would be fun. But there's a lot more considerations beyond like what you want to play, certainly after you make your persona, the calculation changes.
Yes. Yeah. It's also fascinating because the Fool and the Neo, like we end up on the same side towards the end.
You did, yeah.
And that took a very long time, but that was one thing that I never foresaw. I didn't think that there was going to be a connection between the two of them.
Yeah.
They came to it for very different reasons.
Not only that, but the Fool and Neo can be played in very similar ways because both of those archetypes are always the ones that get the party into the most trouble because of their impulsive activity. For the fool, it's because they need to be impulsive to not run out of luck.
They literally need to fuck over the party in order to work.
Yeah. But the Neo, their impulsive behavior comes from the need for fair gold because without that, they are powerless. Yeah, so it is interesting that dynamic ended up happening.
Because Chris's character said it, it's like, wait, if you don't have gold, are you useless, Toby?
He's like, thanks, yes.
Yeah.
But I think that's why it became an interesting dynamic for him because beyond his politics and his climate anxiety, his more psychosocial issue was about acceptance in the group.
Yes.
Yeah.
And whether he was special or not. The answer is he's not special, but he got to be.
I did toy with the idea of... That's the thing. I guess in my mind I was running a meter of how emotionally fucked each character was.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if I thought you weren't, I'd just push you a little bit.
I don't think you're fucked enough at the moment.
I reckon I can push you a bit more.
Is this, and this is, I guess, a question maybe for both Ellen and Phil.
Yeah.
But was like the Neo to like a Greens dude who's very about the environment but uses like all this tech that is kind of sustainable, I guess, in a weird way? Was that like... I'm assuming from that reaction, probably not. But like, I thought that was really interesting because I was like, I guess all of his machines are sustainable because I guess I don't really know how fair gold works.
Well,
but like,
I guess there's themes of scarcity, certainly.
Yeah.
Because you've got a resource that is finite because it runs out at the end of each fucking day.
Sometimes you have to exploit people to get it as well, right?
It's just an interesting, I don't know, there's something about that like the resourcefulness of it or not the resourcefulness, but like the resource requirement of it.
Yeah.
Which felt like it was connected somewhat to the fact that this guy's like a Greens MP. So
I was definitely sitting on the thing of, you know, Toby is probably one of the more altruistic characters. Not probably. He is. So then having him desperately need something need to go to lengths that betray his own sense of morality to get it. That was definitely something that I was like, okay, I'll sit on that.
Make him be a bit selfish.
And if I need to push you, I've got that. But I think you got pretty emotionally fucked it was. So I kind of left that alone.
he instantly had like a different... He kind of a different relationship to the world than the others. I think he very, very quickly went, I'm a fucking badass here and all my failures in the real world don't matter.
Yes.
So this is way better. Why would I bother to go back? And so instead of it being like a tug of like morality and choices. It was more like a literal, let's put these two worlds against each other and weigh them.
In terms of who to give the Neo
who do you
to?
Give the Neo to?
The Neo's core specialism is that of a classic thief, rogue, or assassin. They're gifted in avoidance and stealth and can, if they wish, specialize in ranged attacks. If a player wants to be something in that vague, roguish area, the Neo is their best bet. The connective element is the reliance on fair gold. That fundamentally shapes the class, and any player who is interested in chasing treasure has a home here.
There's I think also... it was more about him being cool. Like,
yes.
He was not cool.
No.
And the Neo is really cool.
He so needed to be something very swish. But also there's something very nice in a meta sense of Phil has run two seasons of Cyberpunk for Roll to Cast and is kind of known, you know, colloquially as the Cyberpunk boy.
Cyberpunk guy.
So there was something nice there in that this is a game all about being meta. So we can go a bit meta in terms of what we've done with Roll to Cast. Luna, obviously you didn't have the choice, so sorry about that.
No, well, I'm going to be so original and say that I also would have liked to have played The Fool. For the pretty much the exact same reason, I also received an ADHD and autism diagnosis this year. So, yeah, I've been kind of thinking a lot about that. But it felt, I often play a lot of characters that are serious or very like, we'll always try and figure out what like the right thing is to do, and we'll like twist themselves up and trying to find the right, the best thing to do. Not that that reflects on me at all as a person, but I was like, oh, The Fool will be fun to play something outside of that, and to just play something that's a little bit more impulsive and not so considerate. But I actually think I got to play that anyway with the Emotion Knight, because tapping into joy, I mean, it was fun to explore the way when you have a lot of joy, how that can sometimes be bad.
Yeah.
It sounds so bad, but like toxic positivity is a thing.
Absolutely.
And I feel like I got to play that kind of more selfish, impulsive character just by being like, I have to be happy all the time and it doesn't matter. Nothing's going to stop me from being happy, you know? Mm-hmm. So that was really fun. But I also think Kat might have worked well as a god binder if I focused more on her like being a people pleaser. I'm going to help everybody. I'll do whatever it takes. I'll make deals with anyone I can to like please people, you know? So that would have been fun too.
Deal with everyone.
I'm gonna die in debt. It's fine.
Yeah, that's right. Taking on debt to do good deeds.
Yeah, totally.
I think that's very self-sacrificing.
So that could have been fun too.
The game also kind of recommends for people maybe not versed in so many different RPGs that The Fool and The Emotion Knight are good ones to jump into. You know, if you've not played too many RPGs. So I was kind of saving The Emotion Knight for one of our guests. But also it says it's the closest to the classic fighter class. It's a role defined by combat. It can be one of the easiest classes to play. Experience an emotion and then use that emotion to defeat your enemies. If the least experienced player doesn't want to be a fool, it's a good class to give to them. If you guide them towards an emotion like rage or terror, then they can have a simple yet powerful experience. But it also talks about, in terms of the persona, if there's a persona clearly driven by their relationship to a single emotion, giving them the Emotion Knight means they're going to explore that relationship in depth. It's a great signal to you as a GM of what interests the player about their persona.
Yeah, right.
And in terms of hearing Kat's persona being a people pleaser and someone who has had to kind of keep their own emotions in check, I was trying to think, well, what would be their power fantasy? You know, what would be her power fantasy?
Cool.
And is it just letting the fuck loose, you know?
Yeah.
Let it loose and kissing girls.
Yeah.
It felt like Kat had never been allowed to be truly happy.
Never experienced that properly and unabashedly.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it
poor cat.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, it's super tragic. Yeah. Yeah.
Joy
is like the most tragic emotion.
Because you use it up, like, you know, and then that emotion is kind of forever tainted by it being a source to your power. You know, there's something really freeing about fighting with an emotion that you want to get rid of, you know. You fight until your grief is spent or you fight until your rage is over. But if you fight until your joy is gone, then you have to keep going afterwards. You know what I mean? Like, there's something really, really tragic about that. This game invites tragedy. Let's be real.
It is literally a game about death. Yeah. Right? It's a game about choosing whether to kind of go to an exciting afterlife or return to reality.
Ellen.
Yes.
If you weren't the master,
who would you play?
Who would you have played?
Great question.
Oh, fuck.
That's not a class.
The way I play it.
No better attitude, man.
Kieran's listening to us. Write that down.
Yeah. Yeah, look, I mean, we've just joked about it as we're
it's
kind
the
of,
fall, isn't it?
No. I actually think I'd be really scared to play the fool.
Can I guess? Can
yeah,
I guess
yeah,
which
yeah.
one you go got? Emotion Knight.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Emotion Knight is very much on my list because it's the most goth, right?
Yeah.
But I was thinking Dictator.
Oh, really?
Because yeah. I quite often play social characters.
Yes,
I mean,
that's true.
We're talking about this in terms of doing some character generation for our next season, but I have a tendency to play characters who want to solve things with their words, whether that is by manipulating people or just, you know, charming them or, you know, whatever the intention is.
Yeah, right.
The action is usually the same of I will use my words. What that says about me, whether that says I'm an inherently manipulative person, you decide. Get in the comments.
what about does that change if someone else in this group of personas was the master and Allegra had to be Paragon? Would Allegra be a dictator?
Probably Allegra would be an emotion knight.
Yeah.
She's
got a lot of emotions. Yeah.
You'll agree
she'll
to work out.
She'll probably be a grief knight. Yeah.
Cool.
Glad we solved that.
Yeah.
Very cool. I believe we have some questions.
There was a really good one to segue to, so just bear with me for a second.
Bearing.
Stand by for bearing.
So while you're doing that, I have a quick secret
hold
to throw
for
out.
Dog.
Please,
I didn't
please.
Get to explore.
Tell us a secret.
I thought it might be fun if Toby still carried a little bit of a candle for Allegra.
I did. Aww. I was sitting on that too because that was a thing of who had crushes on whom.
Yeah.
And it was only Toby who had a crush on Allegra, and I was totally sitting on that just in case Toby needed further nudging.
Yeah, it wasn't necessary to bring up, but I had it in my back pocket. The idea being that everyone else treated him like a total joke, but she was actually like, hey, do you genuinely want to join the Mists, a tolerant game? And she actually treated him with respect. And then he was like, I knew you were hurting, but I didn't know how to help you. I'm sorry.
There's also definitely a layer to how Allegra tried to play to everyone, which belies the fact that she actually knows a lot about them.
Yeah, that's
cares
right.
about them and thinks that this would be the best thing for them.
Yeah.
You know, thinks she knows better and thinks she knows the things that will tempt them to come.
Yes.
What if I put you through this traumatic and dangerous experience for your own good?
I didn't say she was right.
But I think that's why Kat was so cut up at the end, because I think that Kat had that realization too of like, I don't know, just how broken she was and how alone she must have been. Yeah.
Yeah, because I didn't want to play it as moustache twirling villain. Even though at the beginning she was very coy.
I felt like she was playing the game.
She was playing the role, but like, you know, deep down there is a desperate sense of yearning, and I mean, this whole game exists because it's a cry for help, really.
Yeah.
Or a cry to be noticed, a cry to be witnessed.
Yeah.
A eulogy, if you will.
Yeah.
Did you find it? Sorry? I did find it. Yes. Yeah. So it's from Hurricane Hawk in our Discord. What was your favorite piece of role play during the series? And we also did two people asked this question. So sorry, Hurricane Hawk, but we've already talked about what roles we play. So I guess I'll throw it to the floor. Best moments.
For me, it's the table discussion at the end. Like, I know the game is built around like making that interesting.
Yeah, it's all
but
it all funnels to that.
Holy crap. That's some of the best, like, most intense role playing I've ever had. Like the strength of the emotions during that argument, like, and we just touched on exploring Allegra's grief, like finally coming out, this whole thing being born out of her grief and her inability to process that.
Mm.
And then all the arguments between each other about how and why people wanted to say. There were raised voices, there were tears. I just can't get over how effective that was. And for me, it was wonderful because I felt really emotionally invested and I could go kind of full-throated into my part. But because I had the layers between me and the action of both the Paragon and the persona, I didn't feel like emotionally endangered myself. So you know, I was just really, it was palpable in the air. It was thick with emotion. And I loved it. I loved every second.
There's a lot of tears in that
last session.
What are you talking about? No.
not gonna lie, it was like a few days after we'd finished, I did just like put on my headphones and cry thinking about these characters. Aww. Just because, you know, they're very near and dear.
Who cried?
I picked the best.
Max, you literally made an upside down you face just in the like in the epilogue.
Truly, I bawled like a little baby. It was it was phenomenal. But I was going to say, because I know you also did Luna.
I just wanted to throw you under the bus.
I was like,
I don't remember if anyone else.
I did.
Proper, yeah, okay.
I cried. I cried.
Because I was going to say, was it just the ones who had emotions to to deal with? No, okay.
Oh, that's ironic.
I during that moment, Phil, when Xavier chews out Toby, that was not what I intended to say at all. This whole thing in my, as we were going around talking as a round table, finally deciding like whether or not, this whole fucking plan about how you've acted like the protagonist through this whole game. And Xavier was going to be like, that's the angle that he needs to go. And it came around to me and I was like, nah, fuck this. Fuck everything that I've planned. Like I was like writing it down. I was like, okay, so I'll attack him like this way because my character's supposed to be wise and da-da-da-da-da. And I'll like manipulate it. And just it fucked off. It fucked away straight away. I was just like, you know what? Fuck this guy. I don't care anymore. Yeah, fuck him. I'm not trying to win him. I'm just going to fucking yell at him for a bit because I feel that way.
Yeah.
It's really fucking affecting.
Yeah.
And really interesting.
This game does such interesting things to the players, and you know, we talk more about it in the kind of creation and mechanics, but this game encourages bleed, but it does it in such a, you know, safe way.
Yeah, very safe, really
just allows for some stellar role playing experiences.
Some really nice catharsis.
Yeah.
I remember there was a moment where obviously it was the moment when we came out of Die. It was that moment when they actually came out of their paragons and it's just them sitting around the table, and you've just described as like Allegra's there.
Allegra's dead, and I just
remember it became first of all a conversation of, you know, who stays there first.
It
was literally a point where I think it was like finally the collective breath was let out, and the reality of everything is like we are still live people in a real world. And all that's just happened but not happened.
And I just remember
like how that kind of settled. How everything settled was just like, it was just the culmination of every single like emotion and experience. And then it just, it was palpable.
I'm really glad we kind of took that moment at the end for the three of us, like Xavier, Vince and Kat. Sorry, if I'm like Chris.
At least it's not Toby.
I like how we took that moment to actually think about the real world practicality of what do we do now, because it kind of actually did feel very grounding and did help me kind of, I don't know, come out of that like very reactive emotional state. It was good to just be like, well, this fucking dead body, what do we do now? Rather than, you know, because it very easily could have just faded to black right there, you know, before any of that. So I'm glad we kind of, I don't know. I liked that we
to kind of keep it grounded. Yeah, I agree.
I mean, for me, so many moments, like it was just a joy. And then there were moments where I just probably didn't talk for like 40 minutes because I was just watching you all ping pong back and forth and, you know, all the different dynamics change. But like from episode one, which is everyone coming in as their persona, and the party don't stop until we get to, you know, the Mists of Dolorin.
The like, magical transformation.
And that's when we kind of talk a bit more out of, as us, you know, me as Ellen as opposed to as Allegra. But that whole role play was essentially like an hour and a half, full commitment, full character.
And
the conversations were so natural and dynamic, and you could tell so much about these characters, you know, and the fact they hadn't seen each other since teenagers, and you could tell the new dynamics that were beginning to form. And it was just magical. Like I really can't stress enough how cool of a game this is, and that it allows such immersive experiences like that.
Do you know what's really, I guess I would recommend anyone who wants to do this, they should do it, because after playing the whole thing and then going back and listening to that first episode again, it was kind of almost more enjoyable with the context of everything.
Yeah.
And so if anyone's inclined to go and listen to that again, knowing what happens in the whole campaign, like do it. But I don't know, there's something about like knowing where people are going to go as they're meeting up again.
Yeah.
It really, and you can kind of see, the start of the dynamics that form more deeply as we play.
I got to say, as an editor doing that first episode, I have never been more proud of the fact that I found copyright-free Swedish heavy metal music.
Yep.
Like, copyright zero Swedish heavy metal that goes for like 20 minutes. Yeah. I was like, this is perfect.
That is amazing.
I don't have to commission someone.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Yeah. What about you, Sean? What was your favorite moment?
Oh, as I was saying, that that scene just coming out of the...
Coming out?
Yeah, what we talked about.
I want an honorable mention for the heart, the ripping the heart out. That just shocked me. I did not know it was coming.
Yeah, that was pretty hectic.
You just go, mm-hmm. I punched my heart into my hand into her chest and rip her heart out. Everyone's just like, huh?
What?
And also the like this whole backstory that Kat wouldn't have known about, but like it's just got to be a princess's heart. And I think like the God of Light was like, well, and you're like, no, not that one. You know, I had no idea my persona, but I loved being like, well, I guess it's better than mine.
Yeah, true.
I think the honorable mention for me is the reveal of Kat seeing what's Eric? What was his name?
Oh my god, that scene was so
when it was like, it is Brad, and that's just the fucking hell. Okay. And then the conversation that followed, which ended up with just Chris being like, yes, here is your new wife.
Yeah.
No, for me it was the flashback where Ellen played Brad.
That was pretty sad, wasn't it?
They had the passive aggressive argument
about getting married.
That was such good role play. Oh my god.
They definitely love felt you. Electric at the table.
Love oh you yeah. Too.
We you still know. Going to see that film.
Oh my god.
Everything was clenched. I was just like
unclench.
I mean, yeah, it's cheating to say this whole series, but really the joy of having the personas playing paragons, having the flashbacks, encouraging such strong character generation and for people to really commit to it. Like, this is a game where it's like, hey, don't fuck about. You're not better than a role-playing game. You know, because sometimes we do it where we don't fully commit or, you know, we play around or it's tongue-in-cheek. This game is like, commit. Because you'll be all the better for it.
Yeah.
And you'll have such a better time.
There's room in the middle to flow a little bit and step out. But like the crunch at the beginning and the end is like, nah, go big or go home.
It's what makes it worth it. It's what makes role-playing games sometimes in those moments really valuable as things to do.
Yeah.
My favorite moment was right at the end when we were trying to eke out every die, trying to get every single die, every single fucking advantage.
Yeah.
That was delightful.
I think the voice roll, the voice came down to like single digit.
I fucking
roll.
I was so in that.
And Allegra's fate was 50-50.
Yeah. I was so there.
Do you find the D20 or do you not?
Did you have a
favorite moment?
Well, that moment that we just talked about with the flashback was probably one of my proudest moments of role-playing because I've talked about this with these folks around the table, but I have never played such an immersive game where I've been so in a character for so long. And I was definitely very nervous coming to the table with a bunch of actors who are very adept at this. But I felt so safe and that felt like I was really in that moment. And I remember after the last episode, I went home and just like lay looking at the ceiling for like an hour to just to kind of... But I'm very extremely non-confrontational person. So for me to be able to yell at people that, you know, I really don't know all of you that well.
So you know us better now.
But yeah, I think that's a real testament to the vibe that you have all created here. Because That was really, when I got home, I was like, wow, I really yelled at Phil. Like, I really yelled at him.
Fucking laid into him.
I like the idea that we all just went into our rooms and just laid on the floor.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Sean's been working on a playlist.
We had different experiences at the end. I was fist pumping and driving the whole music. Yeah, I was so happy. Yeah. Can I say, the thing that makes me really happy, Luna, is you coming into this group, is that the moment where you played the next card.
Mm. That's exactly what I was just about to bring up.
Yeah. I was really glad that you felt comfortable doing that.
And totally. I think what's really important to bring up about this is because I know that I remember you did a social media post about it, like pretty much on the day that we did it.
Yeah.
And it's coming up because like a week ago, and I'm not going to name them because fuck them. there was another podcasting group that really went ham, like went off about people doing A, episode zeros, and B, using X cards and all this sort of, and like, being,
well, saying that it was bad.
Yeah.
This is a piece of trash podcast.
Yeah.
Sean shared to me and I listened to and I got sad listening
to
it.
I was like, see how much of this you can listen to before you rage quit it. Anyway. My point being is like, and then I thought about that thing about it, but it was such like an amazing experience when we had it happen. And I was just wondering like how that was for you and like feeling okay enough to do that and then like your experience with it afterwards.
Yeah. I mean, it honestly felt like a non-event. It just felt like we moved over it so quickly. It was the first time I've played one and I actually didn't even think about it. And I think I just like, it was just very visceral. I was like, oh no, I don't like that. And it was so easy to just like pick up the card and then we just moved on and it wasn't a thing. Yeah. No one made a big deal about it. Like it was great.
And I felt that was great partially because we really clearly discussed that beforehand. And when you said, oh no, not that, for me, it was like, of course. Yep. We discussed that. Of course. Yeah. All the hard work was done.
Yeah. Because I think, I can't stress how good episode zeros are because they allow you to set things in motion, you know, to yes and off each other, to veto things, to collectively build a game that you're all going to enjoy. And why you wouldn't want to do that boggles the brain to me.
Doesn't it just?
Yeah.
I think there's this idea that safety tools inhibit or like restrict gameplay when it's really the total opposite. It allows you to have so much more freedom.
Oh my God, so much more freedom. Yeah.
And we went dark in this game.
But I think, and I guess what Luna's saying is I don't think that I would have felt as safe as quickly to go to those places if we didn't have safety tools in place.
Mm.
Mm. I think that's what the freedom that it allows you, right?
Absolutely. Any creative person knows that tools and in putting restraints on things aids you in creativity.
Mm-hmm.
It's this kind of, it's such a poor thinking, just because I'm thinking of this podcast.
Yeah.
Fuck those guys. And it speaks to this old kind of D&D mindset, which I'm part of. Like I'm of that era, right? Like I've heard those people speak in public before, you know, like those types of people speak in public before. But it's like, if you've got those restrictions in play, you can play more safely and more creatively. Like it's so, anyway.
Yeah. Use safety tools and stuff in your games.
Yeah,
people.
They're fun and good.
Episode zero, they're cool.
And speaking of, you know, things being counterintuitive, wanted to say to you, Luna, about what you said earlier. Thank you for yelling at me. That's actually a very generous thing to do as an actor.
Yeah.
Right? You are giving me your full throated emotion, and that gives me even more to play with. So I feel very like honored and seen to be yelled at by your character because it means you care and you feel safe enough with me as an actor, as a performer to give me the whole bore.
Yeah.
So thank you for doing that. It's great. I love being yelled at.
I'm still angry about it. Toby has a fucking kid. We could go round two, baby.
I'll get my actual list out and say what I want to say.
Let's all air our grievances.
Let's have another go at Toby. Yeah. Oh my God.
To kind of dovetail into that and a little bit go back because I didn't get to say a thing that I liked.
Favorite moment.
That's all right. The conversation went somewhere else for a while.
No, it's good. It's good.
Away from Max.
But I'm selfish and I want to say mine.
Yes, dictator.
Correct.
But
I think there's a couple of moments I really, really like. I mean, all of the ones that everyone said, of course. But a couple of moments that, again, very selfishly, that I liked because they were about me.
Absolutely.
I think about it quite often, both these moments, which is the earlier in the story, I had told Xavier to relax, man. It's just the game.
Oh, yeah.
And then when I when he resurrected me, him throwing that line back at me was phenomenal.
I wrote the line down because I knew it was coming back.
It was so good.
Because both of those moments I really enjoyed. I really enjoyed getting to do that.
Yes.
When it happens, I thought that was like really key.
Yeah, I
where Vince's
when you
head
did that.
Was at
yeah,
the time.
That was great.
And then to have it thrown back at me was such a like sobering moment.
Yeah.
In a really fantastic way. And also, we talk about the end of the climax of the story a lot, but the moment when both Toby and Logan started trying to kill Vince, essentially.
Yeah.
Because like, you're dangerous.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then immediately having like everything that Xavier and Kat could do to protect me, they did to protect me.
Mm. Yeah.
Like it very much, no one said anything, but it very much came a race to see who can either stop me from speaking or allow me to speak first.
Yeah.
And that was like such a weird place to be in, like emotionally and roleplay wise. Yeah. And I felt like from both of you, I felt an immense amount of danger. I said both of you. I'm on. This is a podcast.
Audio medium.
Sean and Phil.
I felt like threat.
A lot of threat from both of you, and then from Chris and Luna. I felt like an immense amount of support.
Yeah, and we're the good guys.
It was such a bizarre.
I'm not so sure about that.
Yeah. and obviously not that simple, but like. Yeah, what an amazing kind of gift to have that moment thrown at you, you know?
It really ramps up as well from that table talk because we're all talking about why we should stay or why we would go, but the implication of what the end must be, it's the unspoken thing, right? It's the we all know what we're not saying of if we don't agree, it's going to end one way.
Yes.
You know?
And I thought that lead up into it, obviously, which has already been said, and then that initial moment of us kicking into combat and how that played out was
kind of tragic that we argued so much and no one changed their position.
No.
And we tried. It feels like, well, that's boring. It's not.
But you know what? It was finally getting everything out on the table.
Yeah. That's right.
We didn't want to dance around it anymore.
But what's fun and what's interesting, and I've already alluded to it earlier in like us chatting today, but I don't think, especially re-listening to the podcast, like to this campaign, I really don't think everyone's final landing place of what they wanted was where they came in with.
When they first started.
I think actually a lot of the shifting happens throughout of where people, like what people wanted to do, stay or leave.
Yeah.
And then once we got there, too much had happened to convince us of that point.
Yes.
Yeah.
For us to be changed.
Once you got there, you were immovable.
So that conversation, I don't know if it would have ever really actually swayed someone, which I think that's phenomenal, actually.
Yeah.
That makes me so happy because my whole thing was trying to shift you people. All wherever you started from. So it's very delicious that it ended up being a literal split of the party.
Yeah.
I will say I did in the last moment decide that Allegra's priority in terms of that fight, once it kind of slipped way out of control, then her priority was actually, I'm not going to take Logan and Toby with me.
Right.
Yeah.
So, which made me feel a little bit bad because even though this whole sense of PvP is trying to take away agency from the characters, I was like, well, Allegra did kind of take that
already
away from you both in that moment because it was either that or kind of probably you die.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I guess I'm apologizing to you out of character for that because I was like, oh, was that a boundary crossing thing of having those you know, the agency taken from those characters plus the agency taken away from you as players.
But also you're the master. Like that's almost your prerogative as well. I'm like, oh yeah, that makes sense that in that moment Allegra would be like, no, I am just going to do this.
Yeah.
Like, and you'd been so in the background the whole time and I've been trying to tempt you out.
Mm.
Like, yeah, a lot.
It felt right that you finally were like, okay, I'm going to have a hand in this.
Yeah.
So it felt like you'd earned that. Like it didn't feel arbitrary. I actually, in the, we're talking about the conversation, I had hoped to perhaps try and have little scenes where I might where Toby might try and see who was where.
Like the secret conversations that happen in Survivor.
Yeah, that sort of
Let's
thing.
Let's make an alliance.
There was never really the opportunity for it. I had a private moment with D-Dubs, but we were already on the same side.
We just asserted that we were together.
And there was actually an earlier point with Kat and Toby where they said to each other, "Hey, let's never go home."
Yeah.
I was so sure I had Kat. I was so sure I had her on my side.
But then she worked through her emotional issues.
I know.
Baby.
Then she met Daisy. She met Brad again.
Yeah. I will say to Logan, "I'm never going home." Oh. Chills.
Yeah. It was so good.
I got chills.
Oh, that's right. I remember I had the favorite moment, writing a song during an episode.
Yay!
that was very good. It was very good. That's why I chose you to be the fool.
The favorite fool, maybe.
Even if it wasn't your first priority, it would definitely be one of mine.
Even if it wasn't your best work.
No, I never say that.
Do we have any more questions?
So we've kind of also answered Ontarak, who asked a memorable role-playing moment.
Yep.
They have also asked, we might need to kind of do it in a succinct way, but what is everyone's favorite system or setting and why?
Just in general.
Oh, just in general. Wow, okay.
I guess so.
I can just be simple and straight to the point. My favorite system's Call of Cthulhu, the D100 system.
Great.
I adore that system, and I'm playing it regularly now.
Well, this is, interesting for both Luna and Max, because now how many RPGs have you played?
I have not played that many.
I played
this or D&D.
I played three.
Yeah.
Kids on Bikes as well.
I played Kids on Bikes.
Oh, I would also just like to say, wake up, babe, new Roll to Cast lore just dropped, but Max was in the test group for Kids on Bikes.
Yeah.
Max,
I think it was my character,
Zola, and Stan, who you might know from our live show, they played as a test group because I'd never GM'd before and I was really nervous. And so I wanted to get a group of people who I knew were really good at RPGs, but also that I'd feel really safe pinging ideas off. And Max's character ended up translated briefly as a cameo in Mystery Down Under as Jason.
Hated that
who,
guy.
Sean's character just hated him for some reason. It was very...
What do you mean some reason? He was a dick.
You played him faithfully then, yeah. I imagine.
Yes, he did.
Very fun. Him still smoking on the surfboard
was such a crowning
achievement.
He was such a douchebag,
Do you have favorite system / setting?
Well, my favorite setting is Exandria from Critical Role. Of course, I love it there and I would want to live there.
damn it, I came very close to when I was thinking about going really meta with this game and making the group podcasters. I did think about creating a BBEG that was just Matt Mercer.
Oh my
but
God.
Anyway,
oh,
that was,
right. Next time.
Just edit that out. We'll use it.
Sean won't.
It stays in.
Yeah. Exandria, Max, do you have a favorite system / setting?
I guess like system, just because I've done it the most, probably D&D. However, I thoroughly enjoyed Die. Mm. I've never played with this kind of dice pool kind of system before with really low scores. Everything is really simplified in that sense. I didn't know how I was going to feel about it, but I really did enjoy it. Yeah.
Phil.
So my favorite setting is Cyberpunk.
Wow!
I know, it's crazy, right?
What the fuck,
man? I'm rather deeply invested in the core Cyberpunk world, like the you know, not just the general genre of Cyberpunk, but the whole 2020 through 2077 continuous world.
You got your own little fingerprints
in there
now.
I got my own little corner of it.
Yeah, it's very cool.
I love how it all is all continuous, all links through. There are like threads that run all the way through it. I feel like I kind of know that world and I've lived in it. But that said, I don't think Interlock, which is the D10 system it runs on, it's probably not my favorite system-wise. I think my favorite system is probably the Dark Heresy system. I just really like how it works. It's super simple. It's another D100-based system. It's just very, very easy.
It is the Call of Cthulhu system.
It's the same as Call of Cthulhu. It's basically roll D100 and go bonuses are plus or minus 10s.
Yeah.
And that's it. It's really easy.
It's great.
Yeah. Chris?
I have too many. I really like Powered by the Apocalypse. I really like the D10 system of World of Darkness, both editions, both systems of that. I really like the Morkborg system. I really like Die. I really like the D100 system of Dark Heresy.
I think he likes role-playing games.
Could you knock it down to one?
No.
No. He likes role-playing games, maybe.
Maybe... okay, if I had to like...
Gun
I think
to your head.
Desert Island, take one RPG with you.
Eldritch Blast.
The one that makes it most flexible, which is Fiasco.
Ah!
Oh, yeah, you do love Fiasco.
Which is effectively roll a bunch of dice and then it's a binary black or white thing. Yeah. I think that gives you the most freedom in storytelling because it isn't really a role-playing game. It's a storytelling game.
Tool. Yeah, yeah.
So there you go. I just actually want to be a writer and don't have the patience.
The
best setting in the world is the Planescape setting. Classical D&D, give me my 9 alignments. Give me my fucking hells and my 9 hells.
And a nexus between everything.
Give me a nexus. Yeah. Give me a... other than that, maybe like the Warhammer 40K or like the Vampire, the Requiem and Vampire the Masquerade and Mage the Awakening. Yeah.
So World of Darkness.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. And also... Morkborg and also the Gardener is Dead is delightful.
Can you just like
fade it out?
I just like role playing games.
You're just really welcome. Look, I mean, people know I really love the Kids on Oeuvre. Just because I what
Kids on Oeuvre.
What a great word. well used.
That's a cash money word.
That was like a disgust.
I don't come here to fuck around.
That hits well.
So we've done we haven't done Kids on Brooms yet, but we've done Teens in Space and obviously Kids on Bikes, and that being my first game, I really took to it because it's a really intuitive system. I think I like games that engender role playing, you know, much more and having a simplified system in which to do so. I love Kids on Bikes, but you know, not to toot about this game so much, but I knew I was gonna love it from the moment it was announced because it is exactly the thing I love to do. I love to tell really story rich stories. Remember how I was good at
character,
words like a second ago?
Driven.
Yeah, like really narrative heavy stories that use a lot of symbols and have a kind of dreamlike logic to them, really focus on the emotional hooks of each character and have a system, but that really can go anywhere, which this can. It's such a jumping off point. So yeah, that's me.
Any other questions?
This is from Giorgio. Die makes you play a character and that character is also playing a character. During the game, how did each of you approach this exercise and was it difficult to stay in character at any point? I'll just say for me, I guess I had an extra hat of being game master, you know, so there's a lot of times where you're not really in the game itself. So that was pretty easy. I got to completely step outside. But I can't emphasize how much of a boon this game is to getting you into role playing because there's enough safety there that you can really go ham and know that it's the persona, not the player, you know, really going for it. And the fact that then they have their own character, I think you don't really have to try that hard to stay in character.
Yeah, for me, it's not as hard as it looks on paper. It's very daunting playing, oh, I've got two characters to play. But it's not. It's one character with another layer to them. They're doing something else, which is playing a game.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't sort of feel confusing or alienating to have that going on. And also just to fuck the other podcast, which I don't know what it is, but fuck them. Preparation is everything. You have a good prep, good zero, get a good idea of your persona, and then do that improv. You're in. You're in. And you have a solid grip on everything. And you should be flying. You should be off to the races. And that's how it felt for me.
I'm going to link you to that podcast, man. I want to hear it.
Please don't listen
It'll
to
be
it.
In the
it doesn't
show
need
notes.
More views.
Actually, there'll be a link in the Discord.
No.
I was going to say, I think because the personas are quite based on real people and they're quite grounded, I mean, mine is Xavier's pretty based on me pretty clearly. He's a very
interesting.
No one else did that, so that's weird of you.
None of my anxieties went into the character.
Xavier's pretty similar to who I am. If I'd gone a if I'd grown up,
Chris, that could have been.
I was going to say a lot about this. We don't have time. Do we have time?
Go for it.
Okay. Xavier is my growing up poor. When I grew up, I grew up poor, and I know I grew up poor. I was watching Harriet the Spy, the film, and a character is described as poor. And I was sitting at home watching that movie and I looked around and went, oh my God, they're describing me and my family as we watch this. And I was like, fuck, we are a poor family. We do not have money. And so I'm very conscious of that. So having a godbinder who deals in debt, I was like, that's why I, as a D&D player, track money all the time and get really fixated on people who just like, it doesn't matter about tracking money or arrows or details like that. And I'm like, no, you should, because I grew up with that anxiety.
Yeah.
Poor brain. It's real.
Yeah, it's a thing. So it comes across in my... But Xavier is the... and my father shares this. Our love language to friends and others is acts of service. And when people don't acknowledge acts of service, that fucking kills you.
Yeah.
Because you'll do something and you'll be like, hey, I'm doing this because I love you. And people are like, oh yeah, that's just who you are. And it's that. That's why Xavier is... so it's so easy to be that character, because it's a lot of my anxieties, like many of our characters are. Yeah. They're a lot of our anxieties, I think, in some ways.
Yeah.
Is that a fair thing to say?
Yeah.
What are you talking about? Everyone took a real deep breath.
I mean, yes, of course, I think all of our personas were kind of like bizarro versions of ourselves, more or less. I think that's pretty safe to say. And so in that respect, very, very easy to kind of draw on slightly altered version of you and how you would react and respond to this insane scenario of being sucked into a game and having all of these fucking magical powers out of nowhere. And yeah, so I think in that respect, like you were saying before, Phil, once we did all of the prep, the session zero stuff, and then once we did that kind of role play and land in the world of Die, it really takes care of itself.
Yeah.
Like it was actually almost easier. And I don't know if this is true, but...
say it anyway.
No, it felt almost easier to play the persona who's playing a Paragon kind of duality than sometimes I find it is to play like a single character who's like a barbarian person who's like a, you know, whatever.
Well, it's
like
really more campaign. Grounded.
Well, because, you kind of just like, you're not playing two people, you're playing one person, and this one person now has these things that they can do, and they've got this kind of fake name that they've given themselves, and it's still just one person, really.
Yeah,
you just it enriches the role play to the point where you kind of have so much to work with. You're never starved for anything. You never have to generate anything, and it's weirdly.
But you can if you need to with a flashback. Yeah.
But it's not like you were saying, Phil. It's like it's daunting on paper, and I was daunted by it from the concept of it. But actually, I think it's kind of simpler in a way. It's actually easier for me anyway.
Well, you're not playing two different people. You're playing one person playing another person.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And one of my favorite moments, or like series of moments, was seeing the flux between those two kinds of characters, and like, you know, Xavier really never really becoming the Paragon. Like Kat was Avendra a lot of the time when she was feeling great, and then anytime there was some serious moments, that's when she was more like just herself Kat. Like, it was really fun to see that kind of play out. I really loved early on, Sean, how you made the choice to just drop your accent and be like, oh, now I'm being Logan, you know, and then that actually really helped me, because I was like, oh yeah, we can do that.
Yeah,
like,
Logan around you guys, but DW around anyone that they interact with.
Yes, and I really loved that. So yeah, it was really fun seeing that play out.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because, like, I mean, Logan's not Sean at all. He absolutely is. What?
Gotcha.
I've never done anything in my life. That's not Sean at all. But yeah, it's weirdly cathartic in that sense. Like, being able to like explore versions of yourself and like insecurities or heightened versions of yourself as well. Like, I remember doing a theatre show back in acting school, our graduating piece, where I was like, oh, this is me switched up to 11 on a bad day. This is the worst version of me. And I remember my partner at the time saw it and was very distressed because they recognized it was just me in a very bad state. I was like, sorry about that.
But I remember that show.
Yeah.
Is that Middletown?
Yeah, Middletown. Yeah,
that
yeah.
was yeah. a fantastic performance.
I remember gunning for that role from the start of the year going, I need to play this. This is Sean down bad. Yeah. So, yeah, but like playing that in a role-playing setting is like very freeing. And I know we have like the added like experience of we've done this 9 times before together with a group. And obviously we have new players as well, which like changes up the dynamic, but it just makes it so much more enriched. And yeah, I remember us being really daunted by the idea of it at first, going, we're going to have to like really knuckle down to be able to do this. And yet it just fit like a glove in the fact that we just fucking role played and talked to each other for the first hour.
Yeah.
But isn't it interesting that this, for 5 out of 6 are trained actors, all of us have experience with role playing games, and we have the option of playing characters who are not us.
Yes.
And in every single instance, we've taken a genuine part of ourselves and put it as that character. There is no need to do that, but this game sort of invites
it. It encourages it.
And it does it so safely that it's like, oh, it's so beautiful for catharsis. Like, it's such a great vehicle for it. It's no accident that the 6 of us made those choices.
Yeah.
And as heightened as everything was at the end, I don't feel hurt by it.
No.
Like, yes.
I was
safe. I was affected by it, but I wasn't hurt by it.
Yeah. Yes.
Like,
yeah.
watching a great movie, you're like,
You didn't come out of it at the end and went, Luna, why did you yell at me?
Oh, God, my worst nightmare.
Yeah, you grieve for the tragedy,
but
it's a tragedy that we all told together because we wanted to, you know.
Yes.
This idiosyncratic group of players made an equally idiosyncratic group of personas. We all put a piece of ourselves in, and this group of die is not going to be the same as your group of die if you're playing, you know, elsewhere or another group of die.
Now your job is to go listen back to the podcast, and every time Phil fucks up, like forgetting that he has to do a 50-50 on every mechanical
every time I boost.
Yeah.
Well, there's 2 more questions. Oh, but my God. They're mainly for me. So I'll rattle 4.
Can you do that?
Also from, this is.
Ow.
I can. Also from Giorgio. Question for Ellen. More players at the table. New game, new rules. From Kids on Bikes, how did that new GMing experience go for you? Did you learn anything exciting about GMing in general or about you as a GM? I think I'll never feel good as a GM.
Welcome.
I think I'll always be stressed. I guess a thing I learned about myself as a GM, or that I continue to learn, is just that I really just like to see. I like to introduce really emotionally fraught things to characters, shake it up, see where it goes, which doesn't help the stress level because I never really have a planned ending per se, apart from this game has a pretty clear one for you. Everyone has to vote. But same from Mystery Down Under. I didn't have a planned ending. It was more seeing how you'd uncover the mystery. So, I mean, it'd be interesting to see how I go with stuff that's not just a mystery-based kind of thing. But yeah, I like really emotional stories. What can I say? I'm a big tragic. That's me. But yeah. I'm an emo, so.
Also, also the Avatar postseason was a 2-parter, by the way. So even if I split this in 2, that's totally fine.
I feel like I could talk about this for literally 24 hours.
We're not about
hours.
To stop, right? That's the vibe I'm getting, and I don't like it.
Yeah. Let's vote to stay in this postseason.
I mean, the next...
I'll kill you.
The next question is also quite cut and dry, and I can pretty much feel that all weekend.
Let's see how we go. Let's talk about it.
Throw it out.
So this is also from Alex in the Die Discord. I think a question, what was the reason for not broadcasting persona generation? So yeah, a part and parcel of the game is that, yeah, you sit down, you generate your personas from how they were as teenagers, then you talk about how they are now as adults. Then you get right into role-playing them, reconnecting as adults, creating their paragons, getting into the world of Die. That all happens in gameplay, and there's a set break in between sitting down to role-play at the table after you've done your persona generation. The reason that we didn't want to broadcast that for the podcast is I just wanted some time, extra time as a GM to prep, because, you know, we do things a bit bigger here at Roll to Cast. You know, we have six people in a room where we all need to block out 10 to 6 for recording days. You know, we go full hog. It's just a more heightened production of playing around a table.
We did record it as well, by the way. Like, even just for like posterity, I remember we did actually record
yes,
it.
Yeah. Did we? Yeah, we did. Huh. Yeah.
We had both of you on, Luna and Max on Zoom or Discord or whatever, but we recorded just so that if we needed to reflect back on it, we could.
Yeah, so I knew I wanted time in between doing that and recording the season, but also we had certain things like getting Max down, you know, so you would have had to come down earlier, do persona generation, and then have some time for me to just get my head into the system and get everyone to kind of, you know, go deep with their characters, and then we would have had to get you back to record it.
So, R0 is also not quite like a true zero, almost like a zero for a casual table is kind of what we did, which was sit down and do all our persona generation, decide all the relationships and stuff
like that.
Have
some expectations set.
Yeah.
Set expectations. That's where we got all our lines and veils and X's and stuff. But our zero is also like it's an intro to new people at the table, where they're from, how they fit in, how we know them, what they've got going on.
It's affectionately called an episode zero. Yeah.
It's a look at the game itself, why we've picked it, why we're excited. A summarized intro of all that work that we've done.
We make it much more concise because we're essentially, after we finish that, we go straight into episode one.
Yeah.
So we're not doing all of that on the fly. And another reason I wanted to do that is because I wanted to make sure that we were all feeling really comfortable and casual and just talking frankly about things like lines and veils and what tone we wanted to set for the
game.
Not
recording.
I didn't, I didn't want to have that external pressure of
performing.
And we have to perform this, you know. Yeah. I just wanted to be really cozy so we could set ourselves up for success. So that's the real reason that
More like pre-production.
Yeah. It's kind of funny because both your seasons have necessitated that, because Kids on Bikes also, because a lot of the pre-prep is done just rolling and answering things at the table. So you wanted time to actually go away and implement all of that. And both your seasons have had that, I've realized.
And we might chat about it.
That's a thing we've learned about me as a GM.
Yeah. we might chat about it and talk to maybe releasing it on Patreon. So head over to our website, our Discord, and our Patreon, and we might release it, see how we go. If there's a cry for it, like if people really want it, we'll review the footage and
make sure we don't say anything awful.
Well, I mean definitely in terms of, like, you know, do we want people to know what our lines of veils are, stuff, you know, there's a lot of nitty-gritty there. Maybe that'd be a useful thing for people to hear. Maybe people don't want to hear that, so
I did cut the 5 minutes where I slag our audience off.
And I did say all of your exact addresses
We
doxed us all.
The ritual doxing we all do.
And now the stating of the address.
One, two, three, fake streets.
What's your PIN number again? So we are all up to close. Just so we all know.
Here's like a final thing that I have for people. Would you want to play Die again?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Couldn't have answered it quicker.
I don't know if I would want to come back to these characters necessarily.
No.
Just because I think there's a lot of heart there. And I think it just in terms of as a performer, as a creator, it's kind of like I want them to have their ending. They had their story. I think that's their story, and I want them to have some peace.
I want to see Logan as the master.
I was going to say, I was like, I agree,
die again.
There is a die again where Logan and maybe gets in contact with Toby or something. That there is some kind of spin-off sequel that I envisage.
Logan takes a brand new group of people in England.
Yeah,
to make it serialized.
Oh, then we'll have English accents.
Yes. Make it an anthology, right? Yeah. Like American Horror Story. Yeah. So it's like different every time. It's not a continuation.
Yeah. It's like a torch passing.
I'd love to see entirely new characters just from the perspective of what history. So very early, like in the creation, there's like, where are all these kids from?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
there are lots of other groups. Yeah.
All of those different groups, all of those social dynamics.
There's like workmates.
Yeah.
But there's also different, there's now different kind of settings. There's one you can play at a convention, which is really fun. Yeah. And there's
so just strangers.
Yeah, there's a new book that talked to Kieran about it. And I would actually love to, and look, I'm flagging it and I'm getting you all to agree now without asking you before. Because our wonderful audience is listening, you have to say it. No, that's not true. But there's one where you're all essentially like messy exes.
Oh my God.
Oh, that's incredible.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Wait, yes. Can we play Fleetwood Mac playing Guy?
Oh my God. Yes, that would be so good. And I was just thinking when that book comes out, we should play it for a live. Like we'll do it for one of our live streams.
Of course. What the fuck? That sounds so fun.
I would be so curious to see how another gameplay goes, because you were very clear about like don't read anything, don't read the comic if you haven't read it. I just bought the comics. I'm so excited. Yeah. Really good. So I would actually be so interested to see how a second playthrough would play out now that we've sort of
Can I be honest? Yeah. The only reason I fucking saved our fucking dictator is because he's a guest on our podcast.
Oh!
Yeah, that's
so
funny.
Yeah,
legitimately,
send your flight home.
I was so sure at the table on that day. I was so sure that that was it. Like, I was like, "There's no way Xavier saves Vince. That doesn't fucking make
no." I was. Billy any I genuinely sense. Was like. I think I said I justified it afterwards to Phil. I made a comment like, "I can use him."
Cool, now he's in my pocket.
And thank God you did.
Thank God, that's a vote.
Genuinely. Yeah. But I was like, cool, there's a vote gone. That makes me my job easier of getting home.
Just going to say.
At the time,
for real. Because you were antithetical to my goals. You were a problem. I genuinely was like, well, this guy's a guest. But if we play again.
But I love the
the gloves are off.
But I love this guy's a guest, and then cut to the end of the campaign. He's my best man at the wedding.
Yes!
Do you know what I mean?
No, that's
what
nice.
It was fucking beautiful. Turnaround because obviously neither of us saw that coming the dynamic originally. Yeah.
Max, I know you're a guest, but get your hand off that.
I guess the funny thing is that Max would have been fine. This is the one season where it's like, it's not an issue if a guest dies.
That's true.
Yeah.
Anyway, I mean, truthfully, that was more just like I wanted extra mystery and secrets. There's no rules about, and in fact, Kieran Gillen said you can read whatever you like, you know. It's more about uncovering it all and that each character has their own different kind of flavor. So there is inherently that sense of like, well, actually, what kind of tricks does the game master have? What kind of tricks does the fool have?
Like
I don't have
it.
It's a good thing to do. I did it for our vampire season.
Yeah.
And it's a scared Phil.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good.
Well, that brings to an end our questions from the Discord. And that closes... Oh, no, don't make that face, guys!
That's, I don't know what it is!
That's going to be the end of
we voted
when
Phil,
the party's over. Yeah, we all voted and we all need to get back to our real lives, unfortunately.
Party is truly over.
Back on the dying earth.
Awesome. Yeah.
Do you want to... Well,
jeez.
Before, can we end on a nicer note than that?
Got him!
Well, if the earth is dying, why not head over to patreon.com/rolltocast and help support us entertain you as the earth slowly burns.
Yeah, exactly. You don't need that money
slowly.
Where you're going.
No.
I think there's two points of order. First of all, the biggest of thank yous to Max and Luna.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having
us. Incredible guests, and it wouldn't have been the season that it was without you guys. So.
There was a lot of consideration about guest performers, and you know the fact that you're both here means that you know we hold you in very high esteem, but also that we know that you're great at what you do. And this group of die couldn't have happened without this group of people. So
we love you. I had such a good time.
And secondly, we had such a good time. Max says drinking his whiskey.
I did bring whiskey for this debrief.
Sobbing into his whiskey glass.
Yeah. Ellen, what happens next week?
So I think we've kind of let the cat out of the bag several times. Cat's wandering around the studio. We will get to talk to the co-creator of both Die the Comic and the TTRPG, Kieran Gillen. He's writer of gosh, so many comics.
Just all of the comics.
And a lot of them formative
I think Ellen
comic
likes
books.
Him.
Yeah, you know, formative comic books, honestly, throughout my adolescence. It's a very big deal. I was a bit starstruck. So Phil and I talked to Kieran all about the ins and outs of Die, but also about writing in general, about comics, about TTRPGs and why we play them and why we tell stories. It's a really, really, really great chat. So yeah, stick around for that.
Oh, that's the guy you have a shrine to, right, in your room?
No.
Keep it in.
It's an altar.
Don't be silly.
It's an altar. Don't embarrass me in front of our guests.
No.
In front of the internet.
In front of the internet.
Don't embarrass
me in front of the internet.
Excellent. Well, that closes the book on Die the RPG. We'll be talking more about the game, as you know, in the next episode. But in terms of the narrative of when the party's over.
But the podcast doesn't end.
Well, I am going to be running the next season. I am going to be running a game of Modiphius's Dune Adventures in the Imperium. Dune is one of my absolute all-time favorite books. I love the book, love the story, love the world, love the movie. So I'm really, really excited to play it. We've been diving in quite recently, making stuff. And so you'll be hopefully hearing the episode zero very, very soon to find out sort of where we're setting it and who we are. And
why would you do an episode zero?
I know.
So stick around for our interview with Kieran Gillen. Stick around for season 10 of Roll to Cast.
Yes.
And make sure that, you know, you keep on doing all the good things. Like, subscribe, give us a rating, share it around. We have a Patreon where you can get the episodes a day early and also just support us in, you know, making each season bigger, better, faster, shinier.
Ad-free.
Ad-free and minty fresh. And hop into our Discord where, as you know, our lovely Discord people talk to us all the live long day and ask us questions that could be featured in the podcast, so you too can have your own voice on this podcast. That is all from me. I've been Ellen / Allegra / the Game Master.
I have been Phil / Toby / the Neo.
I have been Luna / Kat / Avendra with Gracie. Special mention.
I've been Sean / Logan / the Great DW.
God, I've been... Jesus. I've been Max / Vince / Flynn. Flint? Oh, sorry.
There you go.
You threw me off by the DW voice.
All of the
resentment that I had for you as Vince for Logan just rushed back to me.
Strong finish.
Good job.
Strong start, strong finish.
It's a game with a lot of bleed.
And I was Chris / Xavier, rarely Adam, the Godbinder. Thanks very much for listening. Bye.
Goodbye, everybody.
See ya.
Like and subscribe.
Bye.
Max, why are you... feel like we're bullying you every time we ask you a question.
God.
You have been listening to When the Party's Over, which is a Roll to Cast production. The best way to find us is on Twitter, Discord, and our Patreon. All our podcasts are on Acast, Spotify, YouTube, and all good podcatchers. You can support us on Patreon at www.patreon.com/rolltocast. The Die RPG is copyright of Lemon Inc. Limited and Stephanie Hahn Studio. The underlying game systems and mechanics are copyright of Roward, Rook and Deckard Limited. All rights reserved.
I know them.
But you know.
This is the Die post-season 4 where the party... 10 seconds of silence.
Jesus.
You know, we could really annoy Sean by stopping in the middle.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. it.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.